Chapter 48. Proposed to write, and now he comes to the surface, to rescue our noble and beautiful religion from the sacrilegious talons of Bob Ingersoll. Now come. Don't fool away this treasure which Providence has laid at your feet, but take it up and use it. One can let his imagination run riot in portraying Orion, for there is nothing so extravagant as to be out of character with him. Well, goodbye, and a short life and a merry one be yours. Poor old Methuselah, how did he manage to stand it so long? Yours ever, Mark. To Orion Clemens, unsent, and enclosed with the foregoing, to W.D. Howells, : Munich, February 9, 1879, my dear bro. Yours has just arrived. I enclose a draft on Hartford for $25. You will have abandoned the project you wanted it for by the time it arrives, but no matter, apply it to your newer and present project, whatever it is. You see, I have an ineradicable faith in your unsteadfastness, but mind you, I didn't invent that faith, you conferred it on me yourself. But fire away, fire away. I don't see why a changeable man shouldn't get as much enjoyment out of his changes and transformations and transfigurations as a steadfast man gets out of standing still and pegging at the same old monotonous thing all the time. That is to say, I don't see why a kaleidoscope shouldn't enjoy itself as much as a telescope, nor a grindstone have as good a time as a whetstone, nor a barometer as good a time as a yardstick. I don't feel like girding at you anymore about fickleness of purpose, because I recognize and realize at last that it is incurable. But before I learned to accept this truth, each new weekly project of yours possessed the power of throwing me into the most exhausting and helpless convulsions of profanity. But fire away, now. Your magic has lost its might. I am able to view your inspirations dispassionately and judicially now, and say, is one or that one or the other one is not up to your average flight, or is above it, or below it. And so, without passion, or prejudice, or bias of any kind, I sit in judgment upon your lecture project, and say it was up to your average, it was indeed above it, for it had possibilities in it, and even practical ones. While I was not sorry you abandoned it, I should not be sorry if you had stuck to it and given it a trial. But on the whole, you did the wise thing to lay it aside, I think, because a lecture is a most easy thing to fail in, and at your time of life, and in your own town, such a failure would make a deep and cruel wound in your heart and in your pride. It was decidedly unwise in you to think for a moment of coming before a community who knew you with such a course of lectures, because Keokuk is not unaware that you have been a Swedenborgian, a Presbyterian, a Congregationalist, and a Methodist on probation, and that just a year ago you were an infidel. If Keokuk had gone to your lecture course, it would have gone to be amused, not instructed. For when a man is known to have no settled convictions of his own, he can't convince other people. They would have gone to be amused, and that would have been a deep humiliation to you. It could have been safe for you to appear only where you were unknown, then many of your hearers would think you were in earnest. And they would be right. You are in earnest while your convictions are new. But taking it by and large, you probably did best to discard that project altogether. But I leave you to judge of that, for you are the worst judge I know of. Unfinished. That Mark Twain in many ways was hardly less childlike than his brother is now and again revealed in his letters. He was of steadfast purpose, and he possessed the driving power which Orion Clemens lacked, but the importance to him of some of the smaller matters of life, as shown in a letter like the following, bespeaks a certain simplicity of nature which he never outgrew. To Rev. J. H. Twitchell, in Hartford, Munich, February 24, 1879, Dear Old Joe, it was a mighty good letter, Joe, and that idea of yours is a rattling good one. But I have not sought down here to answer your letter, for it is down at my study, but only to impart some information. for a month I had not shaved without crying. I'd spend 3/4 of an hour wetting away on my hand, no use, couldn't get an edge. Tried a razor strop, same result. So I sat down and put in an hour thinking out the mystery. Then it seemed plain, to wit. My hand can't give a razor an edge, it can only smooth and refine an edge that has already been given. I judge that a razor fresh from the hone is this shape 5. The long point being the continuation of the edge, and that after much use the shape is this 5. The attenuated edge all worn off and gone. By George, I knew that was the explanation. And I knew that a freshly honed and freshly strapped razor won't cut, but after strapping on the hand as a final operation, it will cut. So I sent out for an oil stone. None to be had, but Messenger brought back a little piece of rock the size of a safety dash matchbox. It was bought in a shoemaker's shop, bad flaw in middle of it too, but I put 4 drops of fine olive oil on it, picked out the razor marked Thursday, because it was never any account, and would be no loss, if I spoiled it, gave it a brisk and reckless honing for 10 minutes, then tried it on a hair it wouldn't cut. Then I trotted it through a vigorous 20-minute course on a razor strap, and tried it on a hair it wouldn't cut, tried it on my face, it made me cry, gave it a 5 minutes dropping on my hand, and my land, what an edge he had. We thought we knew what sharp razors were when we were tramping in Switzerland, but it was a mistake, they were dull beside this old Thursday razor of mine, which I mean to name Thursday October Christian, in gratitude. I took my whetstone, and in 20 minutes I put 2 more of my razors in splendid condition, but I leave them in the box, I never use any, but Thursday OC, and shan't till its edge is gone, and then I'll know how to restore it without any delay. We all go to Paris next Thursday, address, Monroe and Company, bankers. With love is ever Mark. In Paris they found pleasant quarters at the Hotel Normandy, but it was a chilly, rainy spring, and the travelers gained a rather poor impression of the French capital. Mark Twain's work did not go well, at first, because of the noises of the street. But then he found a quieter corner in the hotel and made better progress. In a brief note to Aldrich he said, colon, I sleep like a lamb, and write like a lion, I mean the kind of a lion, that writes, if any such. He expected to finish the book in 6 weeks, that is to say, before returning to America. He was looking after its illustrations himself, and a letter to Frank Bliss, of the American Publishing Company, refers to the front piece, which, from time to time, has caused question as to its origin. To Bliss he says, colon, it is a thing which I manufactured by pasting a popular comic picture into the middle of a celebrated biblical one shall attribute it to Titian. It needs to be engraved by a master. The weather continued bad in France and they left there in July, to find it little better in England. They had planned a journey to Scotland to visit Dr. Brown, whose health was not very good. In after years Mark Twain blamed himself harshly for not making the trip, which he declared would have meant so much to Mrs. Clemens. He had forgotten by that time the real reasons for not going, the continued storms and uncertainty of trains which made it barely possible for them to reach Liverpool in time for their sailing dash date, and with characteristic self-reproach vowed that only perversity and obstinacy on his part had prevented the journey to Scotland. From Liverpool, on the eve of sailing, he sent Dr. Brown a goodbye word. To Dr. John Brown, in Edinburgh. Washington Hotel, Lime Street, Liverpool. August 1879, my dear Mr. Brown, during all the 15 months we have been spending on the continent, we have been promising ourselves a sight of you as our latest and most prized delight in a foreign land, but our hope has failed, our plan has miscarried. One obstruction after another intruded itself, and our short sojourn of 3 or 4 weeks on English soil was thus frittered gradually away, and we were at last obliged to give up the idea of seeing you at all. It is a great disappointment, for we wanted to show you how much the Gallopus has grown. She is 7 now, and what a fine creature her sister is, and how prettily they both speak German. There are 6 persons in my party, and they are as difficult to cart around as nearly any other menagerie would be. My wife and Miss Spalding are along, and you may imagine how they take to heart this failure of our long-promised Edinburgh trip. We never even wrote you, because we were always so sure, from day to day, that our affairs would finally so shape themselves, as to let us get to Scotland. But no, everything went wrong. We had only flying trips here and there in place of the leisurely ones which we had planned. We arrived in Liverpool an hour ago very tired, and have halted at this hotel by the advice of misguided friends, and if my instinct and experience are worth anything, it is the very worst hotel on earth, without any exception. We shall move to another hotel early in the morning to spend tomorrow. We sail for America next day in the Gallic. We all join in the sincerest love to you, and in the kindest remembrance, to Ock, son of Dr. Brown. And your sister, truly yours, S50, Clemens. It was September 3, 1879, that Mark Twain returned to America by the steamer Gallic. In the 17 months of his absence he had taken on a raveled look, and had added gray hairs. A New York paper said of his arrival that he looked older than when he went to Germany, and that his hair had turned quite gray. Mark Twain had not finished his book of travel in Paris. In fact, it seemed to him far from complete, and he settled down rather grimly to work on it at Quarry Farm. When, after a few days, no word of greeting came from Howells, Clemens wrote to ask if he were dead or only sleeping. Howells hastily sent a line to say that he had been sleeping the sleep of a torpid conscience. I will feign that I did not know where to write you, but I love you and all of yours, and I am tremendously glad that you are home again. When and where shall we meet? Have you come home with your pockets full of Atlantic papers? Clemens, toiling away at his book, was, as usual, not without the prospect of other plans. Orion, as literary material, never failed to excite him. To W. D. Howells, in Boston. Elmira, September 15, 1879. My dear Howells, when, and where? Here on the farm would be an elegant place to meet, but of course you cannot come so far. So we will say Hartford or Belmont, about the beginning of November. The date of our return to Hartford is uncertain, but will be 3 or 4 weeks hence, I judge. I hope to finish my book here before migrating. I think maybe I've got some Atlantic stuff in my head, but there's none in MS, I believe. Say a friend of mine wants to write a play with me, I to furnish the broad comedy cuss. I don't know anything about his ability, but his letter serves to remind me of our old projects. If you haven't used Orion or Old Wakeman, don't you think you and I can get together and grind out a play with one of those fellows in it? Orion is a field which grows richer and richer the more he mulches it with each new top dressing of religion or other guano. Drop me an immediate line about this, won't you? I imagine I see Orion on the stage, always gentle, always melancholy, always changing his politics and religion, and trying to reform the world, always inventing something, and losing a limb by a new kind of explosion at the end of each of the 4 acts. Poor old chap, he is good material. I can imagine his wife or his sweetheart reluctantly adopting each of his new religious in turn, just in time to see him waltz into the next one, and leave her isolated once more. Mem. Orion's wife has followed him into the outer darkness, after 30 years' rabid membership in the Presbyterian Church. Well, with the sincerest and most abounding love to you and yours, from all this family, I am, yours ever, Mark. The idea of the play interested Howells, but he had twinges of conscience in the matter of using Orion as material. He wrote, "More than once I have taken the skeleton of that comedy of ours, and viewed it with tears. I really have a compunction or two about helping to put your brother into drama. You can say that he is your brother, to do what you like with him, but the alien hand might inflict an incurable hurt on his tender heart. As a matter of fact, Orion Clemens had a keen appreciation of his own shortcomings, and would have enjoyed himself in a play as much as any observer of it. Indeed, it is more than likely that he would have been pleased at the thought of such distinguished dramatization. From the next letter one might almost conclude that he had received a hint of this plan, and was bent upon supplying rich material. To W.D. Howells, in Boston. Elmira, October 1979. My dear Howells, since my return, the mail facilities have enabled Orion to keep me informed as to his intentions. 28 days ago it was his purpose to complete a work aimed at religion, the preface to which he had already written. Afterward he began to sell off his furniture, with the idea of hurrying to Leedsville and tackling silver mining through up his law den, and took in his sign. Then he wrote to Chicago and St. Louis newspapers asking for a situation as aragrapher, enclosing a taste of his quality in the shape of two stanzas of humorous rhymes. By a later mail on the same day he applied to New York and Hartford insurance companies for copying to do. However, it would take too long to detail all his projects. They comprise a removal to Southwest Missouri, application for a reporter's berth on a Keokuk paper, application for a compositor's berth on a St. Louis paper, a rehanging of his attorney's sign, though it only creaks and catches no flies. But last night's letter informs me that he has retackled the religious question, hired a distant den to write in, applied to my mother for $50 to rebuy his furniture, which has advanced in value since the sale, purposes buying $25 worth of books necessary to his labors which he had previously been borrowing, and his first chapter is already on its way to me for my decision as to whether it has enough ungodliness in it or not. Poor Ryan. Your letter struck me while I was meditating a project to beguile you and John Hay and Joe Twitchell into a descent upon Chicago which I dream of making, to witness the reunion of the great commanders of the Western Army Corps on the 9th of next month. My sluggish soul needs a fierce upstirring, and if it would not get it, when Grant enters the meeting place I must doubtless A for the final resurrection. Can you and Hay go? At the same time, confound it, I doubt if I can go myself, for this book isn't done yet. But I would give a heap to be there. I mean to heave some holiness into the Hartford primaries when I go back, and if there was a solitary office in the land which majestic ignorance and incapacity, coupled with purity of heart, could fill, I would run for it. This naturally reminds me of Bret Hart, but let him pass. We propose to leave here for New York October 21, reaching Hartford 24th or 25th. If, upon reflection, you Howells's find, you can stop over here on your way, I wish you would do it, and telegraph me. Getting pretty hungry to see you. I had an idea that this was your shortest way home, but like as not my geography is crippled again, it usually is. Ears ever mark. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.